Good morning, everyone. We welcome you all to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion with our subject of soul today. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, in the United States of America. And we have a special welcome to Lauren and Cameron and Aubrey. Thank you for joining us today. We will start with our morning prayer.
I'm reading from page 160 of Divinity Course and General Collectania. It says, my beloved student, enter into the closet of divine love and there in humility ask this ever-present power to shield and to defend you from the enemies of your souls and bodies, to defend you and guard you and guide you in the path of righteousness, pleasantness, and truth. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. God knows your motive and will reward it or punish it according to his wisdom and justice, not yours. Not the so-called human, but the divine wisdom shall reign despite your mistaken human hopes, motives, or acts. Examine your motives. Ask if selfish desire governs them, or if in obedience to the divine command, you are taking up your cross and following him. Self-seeking will never result in soul finding. In finding divine wisdom and love apart from self, and self swallowed up in a victory of soul. There is but one way of salvation from sin, disease, and death, and this way is to take up the cross in order to follow Christ. Then God, who knows your motive, will reward your act according to that motive and not according to your words. Mary Baker Eddy.
Beautiful. Thank you very much. All right, Karen, the watching point.
Watch number 10. Watch lest in your effort to educate your thought along spiritual lines, you forget that you are not trying to learn something new to you, since as a child of God, you already have access to the precious gems of truth hidden in divine consciousness, and are only working to dig up the spiritual thought through which you may reflect all true knowledge. A man suffering from amnesia or loss of memory is not trying to learn something. He does not need an education. He needs to have his memory restored. A veil of belief has been drawn across his consciousness, which temporarily shuts off his recollection of his real self. This describes man's dilemma from the spiritual standpoint. Man has not really lost his spiritual selfhood and its relation to God. He has merely lost sight of it. Thus, the work of Christian Science is to restore man's soul, which in turn brings to light his unity with God.
Thank you. Beautiful. Comments on that?
Well, I thought of the 23rd Psalm, where in Mrs. Eddy's interpretation of it, she says, love restoreth my soul, spiritual sense. And I never really thought of that word, restore. So I looked up the word, and it says to bring back or recover, to renew or reestablish after interruption. So I applied this to what she says, that line in the 23rd Psalm, and it came to me, love returns to me my spiritual sense of my true selfhood which was never lost, just temporarily lost sight of. I don't know, that just really made it even clearer to me. I love that.
Yes, thank you.
That's beautiful and something that we can know for all mankind, that it is written on their inward parts. They know it, they have it, they can hear that message. Beautiful.
Yes. Yeah, that's good to include all mankind.
Before I came here, in the years before I came here, I did a lot of research and a lot of different things trying to find a way to make life make sense, basically. And I would always get to the point with all of them where I got like the sick feeling and I knew to stop in my research of whatever it was. But coming here, you know, I've been here 11 years. I've never gotten that sick feeling from it. And the reason these truths make sense to us is because that's the way we were built. We're recognizing what we were built with. And I'm really grateful for that.
Very much, yes. Yeah, you know, Eustace says this too in another way, talking about a teacher, that when a teacher teaches, she's only reminding of what he already knows, or she, and that relieves a lot of false responsibility or maybe just tiredness, or you've got to teach these children these things. But they already know because they have divine intelligence, and we know that especially children are especially close to God in their innocence and in their understanding. They're just naturally that way. So I love this too. I love to think about it. And I you know, we say the 23rd Psalm every day, or often anyway, and I love to think of it, thus the work of Christian Science is to restore man's soul, which in turn brings to light his unity with God. So, yes, he, the good shepherd, restoreth my soul. That brings us to our unity with God, and something we've always had. We just need to be reminded of it. And you will know this because when you hear these truths, they make sense to you. They say, oh, yeah, that's right.
Thank you. And let's remember that we are the children of God. There's many quotes from Mary Baker Eddy about children, and it is always divine mind reminds me, you are the child of God. Because sometimes we refer to us adults as the children, you know, as they are the children. That's what I've been reminded of all the time. We are those children of God.
Definitely we are. If we maintain, as Mrs. Eddy says, what Jesus loved about us, that innocency and all of that, we keep that. We are the children of God. And when we love our neighbors ourselves, too, there's some stipulations to it. But anyone else?
Yeah, it's beautiful that this is never lost. He says, this is on page 172 of the Blue Book, he says that, oh, learn to know that you can lose nothing that is real. So we've always had this, and sometimes I think that's why some people are naturally Christian Scientists, because they, in following God, what they know of God, they just live accordingly and never lose that self, the true self. And so whether they're reading Science and Health or not, thank God, Science and Health is now, or has been available for how many years, so that the whole world can know this truth. And it's nothing more important than knowing who you are, and that you never lose that part. That self, that true self, is within you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yes. Anyone else? All right, well, before we get into the lesson, there were a couple of things I wanted to mention. One is I've been reading Discerning the Rights of Man by Richard Oakes. And it is a very important history that all of you should be familiar with if you're not, especially, you know, the idea of this authorized and unauthorized literature and how all this came about, because it's the story of Richard Oakes, who was a good friend of Gilbert Carpenter, senior and especially junior, and how it all came about, how we could have the Blue Book, all of these things. It's important to know this and understand it, because especially when you get told different things, you need to know the truth of what really happened. And Richard Oakes was a dear friend of our church. He's originally from England, but I think he ended up in California. He visited us more than once, and he was taught by Herbert Eustace. And the other is the website that Tony oversees, who is Mary Baker Eddy, and how important it is to look at that and be supporting it. He has a beautiful story, more than one, but a beautiful story about this man, Oscar Noren, who was a diver, and anyway, one that Mrs. Eddy spoke to and one that Mrs. Eddy healed. And it's well worth reading or listening to. It's from the Doris Greckel book. Tony, did you want to say anything more?
I'm just in awe of Mrs. Eddy, but the lives that she touched, it just really, you know, comes out in that Doris Greckel book, yeah, with Sybil Wilbur and Oscar Noren. But no, yeah, thank you for mentioning the website. I'm still doing editing on it. It still needs work, but I had to start it. And I would just encourage everyone to share it. And when you have something that seems remarkable to you about Mrs. Eddy or something, I would love to know it, because I would love to find a way to incorporate it. I'm just doing a lot of research out there, looking at lots of websites with all the misinformation, and I just feel so compelled. I've got to find a way to get the truth out there and have it be found. So thank you for mentioning it.
Yeah, thank you. He also mentioned, you know, if you want to include it on, some of you are on Facebook, include it on your Facebook pages just to circulate it a bit more than it already is. So, good. Well, thank you. Pardon me?
I said maybe Instagram also, those on Instagram.
You can get it out or even mention it. Because there are these misconceptions of her, and it's so important people know who she really was and is. Very important for the future of this science. So this lesson on soul, I was saying it could be how to live a soul-filled life. The science and health is so full of things that we should do. Good in human affections must have ascendancy over the evil and the spiritual over the animal, or happiness will never be won. We shall loathe sin and rebuke it under every mask. And then know about the senses of soul, which we talked about earlier. God. I love unselfish ambition, noble life motives, and purity. These constituents of thought mingling constitute individually and collectively true happiness, strength, and permanence. So, as you have an unselfish ambition, have noble life motives, and purity, then that results in individually and collectively true happiness, strength, and permanence. So if you don't feel you have true happiness, strength, and permanence, do you have unselfish ambitions, noble life motives, and purity? And as you incorporate those in your life, this will be the result. It's wonderful. It's a soul-filled life. And Florence certainly mentioned motives in her prayer this morning. So, and then truth decapitates error, materiality, giving place to man's higher individuality and destiny. So get rid of our materiality. reflecting God's government, man is self-governed. So many other ways, and certainly, again, the Bible is full of this idea of living the soul-filled life. And a lot of that has to do with giving up this false sense of self. So let's see, we'll start with some of the things, beautiful things in the responsive reading. Chardell.
Yes. Hebrews 4. Let us therefore come boldly under the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. And I looked on our website, and this is what came up, the throne of grace, a lovely article. First, it mentions a hymn, 341. They who seek the throne of grace find that throne in every place. If we live a life of prayer, God is present everywhere. And then the article goes on to say, it is truly an awesome thought to realize as children of God, we all can have access to his throne of grace at any given moment of the night or day. And then, never think, dear friend, that you can be without any needful thing. Your dear Father is an ever-present help. You can have audience with Spirit. You can come to the throne of grace and find all that you could possibly need to bring healing, joy, and comfort to all areas of your life. One beautiful definition of grace is the spirit of influence of God operating in man to strengthen and to regenerate, implant, holy affections in the heart. And that was from Webster. It is so good to know that God's grace is always operating within us to strengthen and to bring about all good. As we read in Hebrews, let us therefore come boldly unto the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. End quote. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes. I remember at one time in my life when I was going through a difficult period, that hymn 341, they who seek the throne of grace find that throne in every place. And if we live a life of prayer, God is present everywhere. And that's a promise. As we go about our day, to be always thinking about God, good, about goodness, how to serve him better, how to be more loving, kind, understanding, as well as very much so principled. This lesson brings out being able to rebuke an error, to loathe the error. We have to do that as well, but we can do it in a loving and kind way, if possible. Not, as Mrs. Evans would say, sometimes you need 2x4, whatever it takes. Anyone else want to say anything?
Yeah, can I just comment on that? I worked with that all week, actually. I'm so glad you brought that up. But I focused on the word bold. That, I couldn't get around that word. I mean, so many other times where, you know, we read about that we are to humbly seek. But in this case, they use the word bold. And I'd be curious if anyone else, you know, I have some ideas on that, but clearly that's standing, you know, firm and not being pushed around. And like you just said, maybe the 2x4.
Right. Well, and we're, you know, not with timidity, but yes, boldly. Absolutely. Thank you.
And it also means single-mindedly. You're not doubting. You're not trying to straddle the fence between spirit and matter.
Sure.
Yeah, this divine mind rightly demands our entire obedience affectionately. Are we coming to God with entire obedience, with our entire affection, or do we have some reservations, Or do we want to withhold parts of our life from God and maybe, you know, indulge in our material pleasures and seek Him only when we've got material pains, you know, that sort of thing.
Who else was speaking?
I was. I think here we have to be careful that it's humbly, boldly that there's such a thing. Because one can get into a bold sense of doing something and think it's human, your human will, and it's not. It never is. If it's boldness because of God's power, great, but not otherwise.
That's yeah. Most definitely. The humility is always most important.
Well, and really, they're the same thing, aren't they? Because when we give our entire obedience and affection to God, that is the ultimate of humility. We come boldly to the grace of God out of true humility.
Mm-hmm.
Because Jesus was so very humble, and yet he was also bold. So they go hand in hand, but again, it can be misinterpreted in people. Talk about animal courage, or they go off in the human mind thinking they're doing something divinely when, in fact, it's not. The human.
Not a contest of wills.
Not will. Yes. Boldness. Divine boldness, where you're moved by God to do it.
But she also said it takes courage to utter truth. Doesn't it?
Yes, she does.
Yeah, it takes courage to stand for what you know God approves of or God requires of you. God will require.
She also says like a radical defiance too, yeah.
God will require of us things that other people may disapprove of. And it requires courage. To obey God 100%. And as Florence, get human will out of the way.
Make sure that, well, and if you're moved by God and truly humble, that's what will happen. And that requires constant prayer and dedication to this truth. That's why it's gotten so misused, because people do things without that, without even reading the text. So then also in the responsive reading is about the two-edged sword, which is very important. And in a beautiful article from Carey, The Two-Edged Sword by Helen Louise Haas, she says, truth, this is Eddie in Science and Health, is a two-edged sword guarding and guiding, end quote. Penetrating the chaos of carnality with accelerated force, and revealing its power to bless all who seek it. The two-edged sword of truth will ever be the emblem of Christ's healing, piercing pretenses, wounding to heal, probing the very depths of the fleshly mind. It thereby enables the seeker to become every whit whole. And this is a process that sometimes is very, very uncomfortable. But she goes on, every individual must sometimes encounter and defeat the false sense of self, that self in which we may have been very boastful, in which we have placed untold confidence, which we have glorified and coddled, but which will have to be seen for just what it is, the obstruction in the pathway leading to God or life eternal. On page 233 of Miscellany, our revered leader tells us, ignorance of self is the most stubborn belief to overcome, for apathy, dishonesty, sin follow its train. The most cherished thought of this so-called self is that it may escape the reaping it has sown. Nevertheless, escape is impossible, and any seeming escape is due only to misapprehension or ignorance, and is finally seen not to be and escape it all. We find ourselves just where our thought has taken us. But when the guarding and guiding of thoughts by divine mind is manifested, the fears and incertitudes will disappear with the mist which forms them. For the word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the dividing asunder of soul and spirit and of the joints and marrows, and is a discerner of the thoughts and hearts of thoughts and intents of the heart. So, and she goes on to say about herself, how she had, you know, thought that she had been doing well, and sharp pointed and much needed rebukes has many times been resisted and considered unjust by the writer. But as she looks back upon these experiences with enlightened perception, great significance is attached thereto. On one occasion, she blindly prayed, "Lead thou me on." While within, she was steadily listening to the persistent suggestion of error, which said, "I'm so afraid." Unsolved problems, discord, and discouragement were the fruits of this faltering position. At this point, she was confronted with a startling realization that where she thought she was strong, she was weak. She had to learn what real mental work is, to begin anew and build from a solid foundation, to realize that fear is doubt, and doubt is a species of atheism. Why is that?
Wow. Well, there's no God in fear.
Well, yeah, you can't, you know, if you're doubting, fearing, you don't believe in God. And if you don't believe in God, you're an atheist.
You're denying him, right?
Yeah, you're denying him. Thank you. But when the work was done aright, she became more instant in her affirmations than denials. The parley with error ceased, clarified, was alert. It was then that the light became so clear that she could easily walk in it, and the fruits of spirit began to appear. So, and then, each struggle with personal sense, mesmerism, and suggestion affords the student the opportunity of testing his spiritual strength or growth, and will disclose the kind of stronghold his earnest study of ours have prepared him. It is well to pause in our daily journey and consider how much the master or how much the dupe of mortal mind we really are. And you see, if you're not getting the answers you're seeking, it requires this. And it is uncomfortable, so most people don't want to do it. But it's a sort of truth, the mental anatomy, Mrs. Eddy calls it, where you have to search deep beneath the surface and get rid of things you once thought were good, perhaps. Like human do-goody and human goodness. It's not divine goodness if you're not inspired by God to do things and you're just trying to do it mainly so you look good for other people. That's not good. Not good. So you have to go through this process where you uproot these deep things within you that aren't godlike. And then you get some traction and you can really grow and you do begin to experience the fruits of the spirit. Anyone else who wanted to speak on that? It's an important process, and the lesson brings it out. You know, she talks about loathing the sin and rebuking it under every mask. So, but again, this isn't something you can do humanly. It takes the Christ spirit within you to do it. Otherwise, it results in a big mess.
And if you need help doing it, a good practitioner can help you do it.
Yes, and if you're honest and sincere and you ask God, show me, you know, what's in my heart that doesn't belong there. Show me what I need to know. It will come to you.
Yeah, if you do it boldly and humbly.
Humbly, boldly.
Combination must be, those two words have to be together, I think, as Florence said, have to be together. And in a beautiful poem by Mrs. Eddy, she says, part of it, dear God, how great, how good thou art to heal humanity's sore heart, to probe the wound, then pour the balm, a life perfected, strong, and calm. And again, a quote from her, it is good to talk with our past hours and learn what report they bear and how they might have reported more spiritual growth. With each returning year, higher joys, holier aims, a purer peace, and diviner energy should freshen the fragrance of being. That's Miscellaneous Writings, page 330. So these are the things that are required to live this soul-filled life. And anyway, we will go now to Nancy, what you wrote about in Romans.
Okay, in Romans, let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that are to be are ordained of God. And I found a commentary which I felt was very timely for today. And it starts with God is in control. Whatever the circumstances of your life, for the decisions made in the global corridors of earthly rule, God is firmly and eternally in control, both of your life and over the governments of the world. And he has scheduled a time when he will put all principalities and power under his feet. Despite the policies of politicians, the regulations of religious leaders, and the dictates of both national and international dignitaries under whom we are currently placed, we have an assurance from the authoritative word of God that he is in control and has authorized every authority to carry out his eternal plan and purpose. And he does this so that Christ is all, and Christ will be all in all. It goes on to say that down through history, we see that sometimes the basest of men are often those that the Lord sets in positions of authority. But let us never forget that it is the Lord Most High who remains ruler over the realm of mankind, and that he uses each one to forward his perfect plan and purpose. And no matter what righteous or ungodly decisions are made in the elected establishment or an unelected shadow administration, God remains in sovereign control and will only permit men to achieve their objectives when they forward his perfect plan and purpose in his redemptive program. And Paul's instructions to let every soul be subject to the higher powers can often be resisted by those who recognize the problems and corruption that is often lurking in the corridors of power. But even in those difficult times, we must never forget there is no power except that which comes from God, and the powers that are ordained by God. However difficult we find the circumstances of life, whether it is within our family unit or our national boundaries, we must never forget that God uses these difficulties of life to hone and strengthen our faith and to draw us into a closer fellowship with and dependence on him.
Wow, that's very good and very needed.
Yeah, I thought it was spoke to today.
Yes.
Yeah. Where was that commentary from, Nancy? Can you tell us, sure?
Yes, dailyverseknowingjesus.com.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
May I have that for the liberator?
We can put that in the liberator, yes.
I just asked for it. Thank you.
That was excellent. Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very good, because that's what we see in the world today, in our nation, this election year. And this is the truth about it. Absolute truth that we have to hold to and hold to and hold to. And one thing I wanted to mention, too, you know, they're predicting a pandemic, God forbid, and God does forbid it. and we as Christian Scientists get on the offensive on this, I say, the hell you say. Really, are you going to impose this on us again? And it is an imposition. This is not some random thing that just happens. This is biological warfare, and the hell you say. So we get on our high horse, get out our booklets on watch booklets on government, on contagion particularly, and we work with those. And we nullify this belief. It is not true. It does not come from God. It has no authority. No authority whatsoever, except the fear that it can implant on people's thought. And that's what it tries to do. It just pounds you with all these symptoms and this and that, and if you do this, and we say, the hell you say. We're not having it. So all of you here, all of you listening, you get on this right now, because we can shape the course of history in knowing the truth. And as we do it with the power and authority of Christ, and we have his power and authority, because this is not of God, we can wipe it out. And we've done it many times before where these things raise their ugly heads and then they don't happen. So
now wait, so we can see what God has made. It has none of that. Not at all.
No, we're not going to be dragged through all this stuff again. No, thank you. It's not God's plan. And it's a big mesmerism. It tries to mesmerize you and get you afraid of something that God never made. But because we're afraid of it, we seem to go through the motions of it. And we don't have to. It's just like a bad dream. But we don't have to dream that dream. We live in the Father's house, where reality and health is normal and natural to everyone, everywhere. So thank you.
Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you, and thank you, Nancy, so much for that.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mary,
thank you.
For all that. Could you say, for the sake of maybe new people, the two articles that you were talking about?
Yes, we have watch booklets, and we have four of them, and they're on our website, where you can... One is watching for the government, one is watching contagion, one is on children, and the other is weather. Yes, thank you. And Linda has compiled them, but they are wonderful, strong statements of truth that we have been given through the ages, in our watches and in other ways pertaining to this particular subject. And all of you should have all four watch booklets, everyone, and to be working offensively. We're not going to be on the defense and then all this stuff happens. No. We're going to get on the offensive, and it's not going to happen. It doesn't have to happen. It's not of God, and no one has to fear anything that's not of God. You don't have to be afraid, because God never said it. So never said it, then... not being said, and it's not happening. And as we were told here, it's nobody talking about nothing to no one. Okay? So there we go.
You go to the main page of the website and scroll all the way down. The booklets are there.
Thank you. Thank you. So, yes, you can print them off for yourself. And another beautiful article called True Hope by Ella Hoag, sent from Carrie, just speaks about the importance of hope. And I mean, that is true. And many people have said to me that Christian Scientists has given them hope. Hope that things are going to work out after all. Hope fixed on promises which are to result in present good. So we can hope, because which hope we have as an anchor soul, both sure and steadfast, comes after walking boldly to the throne of grace. So we can be all hopeful, and then more than hopeful, we can have faith, and then after faith comes the knowing of this truth. And we will bring it to pass. This to a famous French writer of maxims declared, this is about gratitude is a lively sense of benefits to come. So I think that goes with hope. Gratitude is a lively sense of benefits to come. So as we're grateful and hopeful and faithful and trusting, then all good will come. And we must stand fast in that and not be doubtful and fearful and all those other things, right?
That's certainly the way Jesus used it. He was always thankful before healing or doing anything. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you. And also in this lesson is about supply. O everyone that thirsteth, come ye to the waters. He that hath money, come ye buy and eat. He that hath no money, come ye buy and eat. Yea, come buy wine and milk without money and without price. And then the feeding of the multitude by Jesus. This beautiful article called The Banqueting House by a Percy Philip File, he says, continuous refreshment in the banqueting house of spirit cannot diminish supply nor deprive another of anything. The multiplication of mind's ideas is perpetually operating without fluctuation or deviation, without depletion of quantity, and without variation in quality. Mortal sense is always face to face with lack in various phases. The seeking for material plenty is one of the most profound yet unsatisfactory problems to which mankind applies itself. The urge to secure is coupled with the fear of dispossession. The twain are co-commitment with the mortal thinking of all peoples and all generations. But it is a travesty on the reality that whenever we enjoy the use of anything, this enjoyment is accompanied by the fear that an evil force will arise and snatch it from our grasp. The bountiness of spirit's banqueting house is for all and includes all. It is embracing. Its bounty is manifested as improved health, happiness, harmony, love, capacity, intelligence, environment, conditions, and the many other positive qualities which supersede the negative and discordant when we put into practice the understanding of spiritual law. So, and then miscellaneous writings by Mrs. Eddy. We have nothing to fear when love is at the helm of thought, but everything to enjoy on earth and in heaven. Then we can sing, that's the end of the quote, then we sing with understanding as did Solomon. He brought me to the banqueting house and his banner over me is love. So everyone comes to this banqueting house, which there's no depletion of it. It's unlimited supply. But in order to have this, you must stay in the Father's house and be doing his will as much as you understand and as much as you can. And then he does supply all good. This is another very important thing right now to be available, to be thinking of, because a lot of people think they don't have enough. And everyone does, truly, everyone does. And I would like to share with you something. This was so beautiful. I've been reading now The Destiny of the Mother Church by Bliss Knapp, and I can truly understand why the organization didn't want it out. You know, Bliss Knapp knew Mrs. Eddy, and especially his parents, Flavia and Ira Knapp, and they were very faithful, loyal students of Mrs. Eddy. And in building the first church, her church in Boston, the original church, it says, Mrs. Eddy sent letters to 42 of her students, counting husband and wife as one, requesting them to subscribe $1,000 each to the building fund. The significance of this request does not appear on the surface, for most of that number were in rather limited financial circumstances. Perhaps not more than a dozen of them could at that moment have drawn a check for $1,000. It meant, therefore, that Mrs. Eddy had by invitation enlisted this group of Christian Scientists to do the most efficient metaphysical work of which they were capable in order to raise their quota for the building fund. The result was that these metaphysicians, under Mrs. Eddy's leadership, succeeded in establishing for all time the proof the spontaneity of unlimited supply is the normal fact. Mm-hmm. How good is that?
Mm-hmm.
All of these people thought they didn't have money, and $1,000 in those days was a lot. They were all able to demonstrate it through prayer and Christ. And because there was a need, and God provides the source of
that. It's wonderful to remember, with great humility, of course, that everything that we seem to own belongs to God. And Adam Dickey's article on possession is so points out so many wonderful facts with that that we can work with. And so therefore, there is no depletion. It's infinite. And so we don't have to be afraid when we're giving. So that's wonderful.
Thank you very much. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because isn't that the thought you get, that you're always going to not have enough? And that does not have to be. His supply is infinite. The good is available to everyone.
This is interesting. On page 173 of the Blue Book again, it says that in her science and health, signed after she left her. Quote, whenever there seems to be a need or lack in your experience, this simply indicates the scientific fact that this seeming need is already supplied by God's gracious abundance. Then give thanks with your whole heart, because you have learned in Christian Science that God's supply is ever at hand.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Beautiful. I just looked up what $1,000 in 1895. I don't know if that was the year, but it would be worth $37,401 today.
Wow.
Supply is always at hand.
So. Yes, how many of us would just pull that out of our pockets? I love the way she said it, that the spontaneity of unlimited supply is the normal fact, just like health is the normal fact, joy is the normal fact, spiritual senses, sight, ears, eyes, all of that, normal fact. If we're not having that, if we're not having happiness and joy in our life and health and supply, that's abnormal. We don't accept it as abnormal. And it's important to know that, because you get where you see it all around the world, you think it's normal. Normal to be that way, so you accept it. No, it's not what God says. And then this beautiful thing also in this, it's a chapter, the completion of the prayer in stone by the Destiny of the Mother Church. It tells about the cornerstone. I might have to end on this. The cornerstone, the building of the original church. And this meant a lot to me, mainly because most of you recently, and Imogen is going to give a testimony about this, but she visited us, Plainfield, she and her husband, Christoph, for a couple of months, and they did go up to the church center. And she said, you know, she had to kind of go past the extension and all of that. But when she got to the original church, the peace that she felt, the calmness, and she actually sat there on the cornerstone and just prayed. And I told her she was communing with the saints, because she was. And then this is the story of it by Ira Knapp, who was there. Let me relate the picture of that day as we laid the cornerstone. I was there in the morning. The workmen said the stone could not be laid for 5 days. I showed the foreman how it could be done that day, and promised a reward if he would carry out the plan. He changed his voice and said it could be done, and that he would work to that end if it took until late in the day. I was there nearly all the time, directing, even where it did not seem my place to do so. I came boldly into the throne. But the stone was laid, which contains all your works on Christian Science. This is a letter to Mrs. Eddy, I should have prefaced. He's writing this to Mrs. Eddy. But the stone was laid, which contains all your work on Christian Science. And a little before the seventh hour, in the twilight of the evening, the three directors consecrated the event as you had directed us to do. So with one hand upon the stone, our heads uncovered, and faces toward the western sky, where the clouds of that weary day were disappearing, we stood in silent communion with God, followed with the Lord's Prayer in unison. As we lifted our voices upon the stillness around us, thus may it rest until God's purpose is on earth as it is in heaven. Lovingly yours, Ira O. Knapp. Now, this is the value of the church center, especially the original church. It has tremendous value, not in just mortar and bricks and stones, but the prayer. It was a prayer in stone. What was accomplished, all those prayers that brought it about, that makes a spiritual idea that the storm might try to beat against it, but only in vain. And we must know this. We must uphold that beautiful church of Mrs. Eddy's, that prayer of stone, and remember all those demonstrations that were accomplished. Liz Knapp says we should all read the building of the Mother Church. I think that's the name of it. But anyway, it's what by James Armstrong, I think. We should all read that. I've read it years ago, but not recently. So, and why? Because it tells of all the things they overcame, all the false beliefs of error that were overcome. And that is the importance of that area and why, you know, the fact that they were to bring all this condominium and a hotel and everything like that. I mean, how in the world could that happen? I mean, it's just, and we know the truth about it. Hold it in your thought, okay? You have a lot of good work to do. And now we will end on this short here.
This is an article in the Sentinel 900, Religious Items by Baptist Watchman, what it means to be willing to lose one's soul. And he writes, concerning the law of want, a writer in the Baptist Watchman says, quote, he who would gain the whole world must be willing to lose his own soul. He who wants God must give up self. He who wants righteousness must surrender his sin. There must also be the element of patience. The want must endure. Long forces work slowly. You may not have what you want in 1 minute or in 1 day. The law holds good in the long run. The want that wins is the want that waits. Let the want be single and supreme. Let it be woven into fibers of the being and built into the foundation of the life. Then, sooner or later, with a fullness that will fill the soul, that which you want will come to you. End quote.
Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.